I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, New Yorker staff writer Jeffrey Toobin talks to the Academy Award-winning actor Cuba Gooding Jr. Gooding is playing the title role in The People vs. O.J. Simpson, a TV series based on Toobin's 1996 book about the Simpson trial, The Run of His Life.
O.J. Simpson formally charged today with two counts of murder. He was supposed to surrender at 11 o'clock today.
More than 20 years ago, a white Bronco with O.J. Simpson in the passenger seat took a long, meandering drive down a Los Angeles freeway with the LAPD in pursuit and the entire country watching on television.
This is Larry King as we stay atop this scene.
We're seeing a car that's been pulling up, pulling back, and now we see the white Bronco take off at a speed that's considerably faster than it's been driving before. But look at the people standing on the freeway there, waving.
Simpson's arrest and trial for double homicide are the subject of American Crime Story, which started its season last week on FX. If you're older than, say, 25, I don't need to remind you just how big a deal the Simpson trial was. And one of the things that transformed it from an L.A. celebrity trial into a national story about race and justice was Jeffrey Toobin's coverage of the events in The New Yorker. Before turning to journalism, Toobin was a lawyer who had worked as a federal prosecutor. The book Toobin eventually wrote about the Simpson trial, The Run of His Life, is the primary source of the FX series. In the course of consulting on the show, Toobin got to know Cuba Gooding Jr., who plays O.J. Simpson, and they met up the other day to compare notes, starting with what happened to Gooding's voice.
It sounds like this for the past 3-4 months. I think it's something I did in this room.
Is that true, really?
I really do. I went to an ENT and put that tube down my throat and looked at my vocal cords, and they were like, "He's a little red, but no."
You think there was no one palps. Scene in particular that you may have lost it? I mean, you may have damaged your voice?
It was one of those things. As you know, there was not more than 3 or 4 days that would pass where I'd have to yell. And when you're doing a scene, you yell take after take after take after take. And this condition kind of developed through the 6 months of filming this thing.
So. Have you ever worked on a longer shoot
no,
than this?
No, never. And I believe that this is why we have this golden age of television. Because you have real filmmakers that are telling stories, not in a 3-hour restriction, but 10 and 13 hours. And they get to develop, all aspects of whatever idea of a story they have. We delve so deeply in the back story of these characters. We go to Chris Darden's house, we meet his father, we meet the other people, and Marcia and her divorce, and we see her struggle through that. And as you see the behind the scenes of these people, you see the perfect storm of events in the courtroom and how their outside the courtroom lives, affect their judgment inside the courtroom.
So let me start with your experience with the backstory. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I think all of us involved in this project get used to is what I think of as the official question, which is, where were you during the Bronco chase?
Right.
Where were you during the Bronco chase?
I was watching the Knicks game, one of the playoff games, at a party with a bunch of people. And I remember we had the game on a big screen, and in the corner of the screen, they cut to an image of the Bronco on the freeway.
So what'd you think when you were watching it?
I was, a lot of things, I had identified with the fact that he was an African-American personality, celebrity, and he was being accused of something that he might not have done.
Had you ever met him?
I did. It was the height of the Boys in the Hood hoopla, and I could go to any nightclub, and they would get me a table, and they'd have other celebrities in the club come by the table and say hi, and he was one of them. I remember him walking up in his leather pants, and he had like a girl on each arm. He's like, "Man, that movie was powerful," and he called me like Young Buck or something like that, and then he walked off, and that was, I'll never forget it.
Now, my experience with this case begins when I start to write about it, and I have this conversation with Bob Shapiro, which is dramatized in the film.
Thanks for taking the time to see me. I'm doing a piece on cash for trash stories, witnesses selling their testimony. The O.J. Simpson trial seemed like
No, it's inconsequential. It's window dressing. It's not the best use of your time with me.
It's the story I'm out here to cover.
I know it is, but wouldn't you rather ask me why a man like me would take a case like this? You might be surprised.
I might be surprised if I'm surprised. Okay. Tell me.
Because of its far-reaching implications. I've never seen anything like it, and I couldn't stand by and let it happen. Please.
Let what happen exactly?
The systematic railroading of O.J. Simpson by a racist LAPD because he is a black man.
Okay, wait, so all the blood evidence, somehow these cops, a cabal of racist police officers, planted it from the murder scene to the Bronco to Rockingham?
Who else could have? Jeff, you look like a smart kid. Don't rush to judgment. We will show that it's impossible for a black man to get a fair shake with the LAPD. We will prove this.
So you're going to say this case is all about race?
Yes, because it is. I'm just simply shedding a light on it.
What was your reaction as you were seeing that, just as a citizen, you know, watching the drama unfold?
So I remember announcing that they had reached a verdict. And I remember holding my breath and them saying not guilty and feeling a huge sigh of relief.
Explain that. Why? Why did you feel like
I didn't care if he did it or not? I just didn't want them to accuse another black man for a crime he didn't commit. White men get off all the time. Rich men get off all the time. This is one of our heroes. And you know, you think about it. I was a young, black, successful entertainer, you know, movie star. And I really looked at it as, this could be you, Cuba. This could be you being blamed for doing something horrible and the cops planting evidence against you. That's how, that's the only frame of mind that I ever had put myself in. To be honest with you, Jeffrey, it wasn't until reading the research and doing this that I finally felt a sense of guilt for feeling that way.
Huh. You later felt guilty. Why did you feel guilty?
I did because never once did I consider the families. I never considered the Goldman families. I never considered the Browns. You know, whether you believe he did it or not, there were two families' lives that were shattered.
The ambivalence you're describing of, in the different ways you reacted to the verdict, it reminds me of your performance. Because your portrayal of O.J. is not just the guilty murderer and not just the charismatic innocent man. You can see him through different perspectives.
Well, I know that's the agreement that Ryan and I had come to terms with.
That's Ryan Murphy, who
Ryan
was
Murphy.
One of the executive producers.
Right.
And what was that agreement?
Ryan and I got to a place during filming where it was almost like a shorthand, like he would walk up to me and whisper before take, okay, this time I want you to experience the guilt of what you did. You know, and then he'd come back and say, all right, now this time I want you to experience the frustration because, you know, your son did it. Or, you know, it was like little things like that that would just set me in.
That strikes me as a non-actor, as very difficult, even in the context of acting. Because, I mean, have you ever had a part where you had to play someone so differently within the same scenes?
I think that's the gig.
Really?
I'll never, that's the artistry. I'll never forget. My first master class was on the set of a film called Outbreak. And Dustin Hoffman, he pulled me aside after I'd been weeping in this one scene. He said, laugh during this take. He goes, just laugh. Just do it. Do it the opposite, man. And I did, and actually found something that worked. And I think as an actor, you can't judge your character. You can't come in and say, this is how I'm going to play this scene.
Let me ask you about one scene in particular, which is so dramatic and so meaningful, which is during the Bronco chase, because all of us out in the outside world, we saw the outside of the Bronco.
Yeah.
But what is so captivating is you see the inside of the Bronco. And
right.
You see you, OJ, holding the gun, contemplating whether to commit suicide.
That's right.
What do you want me to do, OJ?
I should die.
No, put the gun down, Juice.
I'm tired of you driving me around, AC.
Tell me what you need.
Take me to the cemetery.
No, man, we did that already.
I don't know what is happening. Why is this happening to me? I don't understand. I had such a beautiful family. Nicole and Sydney and Justin.
You still got the kids, Juice, all right? Think about the kids.
Just take me home. I want to see Mama.
Brother, we got half the police in California in pursuit. They might not let us.
I want to stand! You know, it's funny. For the longest time, I would hear actors talk about how it was difficult to shake a character, and I always thought it was bullshit. Mm-hmm. I remember Heath Ledger said it with the Joker character.
Right.
And after this role, I understood it. I truly understood that you go through a psychosis, and it literally took me, I don't know, months maybe. And you know, it's so funny because I'm still today haunted by certain frame of minds I don't want to put myself in. You know, there's this wonderful series called Making of a Murderer
sure.
that I have not watched because I just can't go there. I'm not ready to allow myself to indulge in that again.
Yeah.
And that's why I probably won't watch this for a while. You ever seen a movie and you start to cry in a movie? Well, think about it, you're an actor and what got you to that emotional place. You go there again, you know?
Let me move on to something that I found a very sort of moving story. One of the episodes is directed by John Singleton, who directed you in Boys in the Hood.
That's right.
And when you appeared on the set, tell what happened.
No, it was really cool. We did a few takes of a scene, and he goes, come here. And he pulls me onto the quiet part of the mock version of the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls in there, and he turns to me, and he starts crying. And he starts shaking and he's hugging me. And I start crying because I don't know what he's going to say. And he goes, we've come full circle. We've come full circle. You know, he says, our careers, do you realize? And I get emotional saying about it, but he was right because I was 22 years old. He was 22. And now here we are telling about the social ills and in Los Angeles, police harassment all over again, 25 years later. And it was just that moment that really... that really hit home with him emotionally.
Well, and that story resonates for so many reasons, not least because, you know, we are in a moment now where the subject of African Americans in the film business is top of mind.
Right.
You won an Academy Award. John was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah.
But this year, no African American actors have been nominated for Academy Awards.
That's right.
What's your thought? How do you regard the situation now in Hollywood for African American actors?
You know, do we start with the negative or the positive? Let's say the positive. I've been an Academy member since I worked on Outbreak. Again, I mentioned that movie. And
that was even before Jerry Maguire?
Oh, yeah.
So you were an Academy member even before you won your...
To become Academy member, this was in 1992, you have to have starred in three major motion pictures and be nominated by two Academy members. And then you put your application in. My two sponsors were Dustin Hoffman and Kevin Spacey. I was, and I still am so proud that I got in when I got in. And then a few years later, wind up winning the damn thing,
right.
Okay? But, you know, there was also statements made by Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith asking for a boycott. When I won my award, those two individuals stood up first in that audience. And I will always love them for that. Even though if I was invited to go, I would attend, absolutely. But I think it was necessary for that dialogue to be started because it promoted change in the voting. And there is a place for people to voice, even if it's a radical voice, it promotes change. And that's why we're in the better place we are today.
So you don't support a boycott, but you're glad that people are talking about
one. That's right. That's exactly right.
That was Jeffrey Toobin talking with Cuba Gooding Jr.